Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not long ago when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And number three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise. And it was something I could not only understand but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better about money but didn't until they were forced to because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to a rich history of successful women who, when faced with some personal challenges, found the ability to step beyond them. We'll examine some of the truths they made up about money from their life experiences and how that shaped the paths they chose. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Michelle Baker. Michelle is the Congruency Catalyst, a highly engaging and captivating international speaker, purpose coach, trainer, and well-respected teacher of vision. Her mission is to empower as many as possible to experience joy and excitement for their lives. She does this through the unique vision development process. Michelle's clients move from uncomfortable to uncompromising by creating successful vision and mission strategies that increase revenues, build social awareness, and become key players in their communities. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Lynn. It is so wonderful to be here and an honor to be speaking with you today.
Well, thank you. I really think that from everything I've heard of you, everybody just praises you to the hilt and talks about you with an energy force that's probably greater than gravity. So I don't know. I don't know if that's true, but I have a suspicion it may be. Let's talk first about your business. I'm interested in knowing how you picked the term congruency in the first place. How does congruency work in with what you do?
Congruency is a fancy word for alignment, and I have the gift for alliteration. So what I found was that people really got that energy, that excitement, and got into action when they were around me. My clients always were just really, they take off. I'd watch their trajectory change. And so I started with a couple of different iterations, the vision development and, you know, action, catalyst, and then we came with congruency because I just needed to have an alliteration.
Okay, so you're the congruency catalyst.
Yes.
I love it. I think I've never heard anything like that before, but I think it's when I read it the first time, my question was, what does that mean? And you just explained it. So I guess it's not so much the title, but the results.
It is indicative of, I help people to go and to look at align their beliefs and behaviors so they can have a better life and a better business.
And what inspired you to do this?
Well, when I stepped into entrepreneurship, I was coached that everyone is an expert in something already. So it's that question, what is the number one question you are asked? And the number one question I've always been asked was, how do you do that? And I would go, do what? And they were like, how are you? Do you? I mean, you're like the same person all the time. You know, everything rolls off of you like water off a duck's back. How do you do that? Like, how are you always smiling? How are you so happy? And that's what I found was as I sat with self and journaled and did some internal work, I'm like, yeah, I guess that is a good question. And I found that it's because I have a clarity of purpose, which gives the mind's eye picture, my vision, to where I want to be, and I don't let outside circumstances deter me, distract me, delay me, or deny me from what I know that I'm capable of doing.
And what is that purpose that you discovered?
So my purpose is to empower as many people as possible so that they can experience joy and excitement. My natural gift to the world is that I am a relentless optimist. I actually help people basically repurpose their past. The number one reason I see that my clients are struggling is they talk about stuff they didn't have or they didn't give, or disappointments, or what they can't do, and I take all of that energy. It's like buckshot. It's like they're spraying buckshot, and I get it to the laser focus of what I call the sniper scope. And then when you take all that energy, you're already doing something, because I don't move park cars, so you need to be in motion and take all that energy and focus it on one destination. My question always is, how many places can you arrive at once? And they say, yeah. One. I said, so why are you trying to arrive at 10?
That's a good question. I like that one. It kind of helps people say, where have I been scattering all of my focus and my energies, when the reality is that if I can focus on one thing and get that done, boy, I'll be happy. That would
right.
be a nice thing.
Right. Right.
So you help. How do you help people find that focus?
I'm a person of faith, and I tell people I'm not a religious snob. I call them God. You can call them universe, the divine, the spirit, the goddess, whatever you call. There's a higher power and something that's out there, the universe, that wants to work on your behalf. So what I do is I ask the question, how can I most efficiently help people do this? Because we're all squirrels. There's so much grabbing at our attention right now. So how do I capture someone's attention and help them to get and stay focused, acquire that focus, and then maintain it for the long haul? I'm a true believer that purpose in life, anything good, it doesn't come in a tuxedo with a red carpet and a limo. It comes with a overalls, a pickaxe, a shovel, and a pickup truck. It's work.
Oh, that's good. There's a visual. I like that.
Exactly. I'm like, it's work. So the question that I ask is, I help my clients answer, is what would you do if you knew you would not fail? That generally uncovers their elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't even have an answer to that because they've never really thought about it. They've been spending their life doing what they thought they should do, what they ought to do, or doing for other people. So sometimes it takes some more work just to get them to find the answer to that question.
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think it's one of those questions that you say to yourself, why didn't I think about that before? Because that really does uncover all the noise that's there about why it is that you can't do that particular thing that you want. And I think failure is the thing that's usually thrown up in our face as the reason why we shouldn't do this. We hear all of the naysayers about, well, did you think about this? Did you think about that? Because if you do this, you know, you can't have that, and blah, blah, blah. Much of what I do and have been doing is working with women who are close to retirement. And you can't, well, you can probably, imagine all of the reasons why I hear about I can't do this. And it's all stuff about, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? And that's a great question to ask them. What would they do if they knew they couldn't fail? Because I think that would open up the doors for so many people to just really live a very rich and joyful life in so-called retirement. And it's a great question. I really appreciate that. Let me ask you something else. I know that you've had a very interesting childhood, in the sense that it caused some, I guess you'd say, defining moments for you as you experienced things as a teenager. So would you share some of that with our listeners?
Oh, absolutely. My life is an open book. When I was younger, I actually, my father and my grandfather was a sharecropper in Louisiana who actually bought his property and was well known for his fruit and vegetable stand. And my father later took a turn, and he owns a small business. And so I had an entrepreneurial spirit in me, but, you know, parents divorced, was raised in not the greatest neighborhoods, urban. environment, but I had three businesses when I was 13, babysitting, baking, and sewing. And
tell me about that baking one, because I'm fascinated by that. How did you get that started, and how did you find the people to sell the baked goods to?
So I started with the Easy Bake Oven, and it really...
Get out! Did you really?
I got an Easy Bake Oven as a little girl, and I just found I love to bake.
I thought you were telling me you were baking those things in the Easy Bake Oven. That would be an amazing thing to see. Okay. So that's what got you started. So then from there...
And I found that as any child looking for affirmation and affection, that I really enjoyed baking, and I had a natural gifting for it, and it really made people happy. I saw that baked goods really brought about joy. Being in such a tumultuous upbringing, I was just searching as the oldest sibling to look to try to make the parents and the adults around me happy, because that just seemed when the adults were happy, the kids were, it made life easy for us.
Yeah. So what were your favorite things to bake?
My favorite things to bake were cookies and cake. And what I did
was... what were your best sellers?
Probably my chocolate chip and oatmeal cookies.
All right.
Yeah, oatmeal raisin with nuts, with or without nuts, and chocolate chip with or without nuts were my best sellers.
That's great.
My mom worked at the phone company, and she was a manager of operators. And so I took a three-ring binder, took a ladies' home journal and a good housekeeping, and created a book. It was half of it was took pages and made prices, stuck them on, and half the book was where you what you could order, and the second half was placing your order. So
wow.
She took home on Wednesdays, and she delivered the goods on Fridays.
That's great. Well, you had an assistant to help with all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what made it work, I suppose, because you had the audience to sell it to. What was the third thing that you said you had as a business?
Babysitting and then sewing. All the women in my family, we know how to sew to tailoring. And it's one of those things that we don't even know why. It's kind of like that story, they cut off the end of the ham. You don't know why, you just do.
Yeah. Yeah. So then what happened after you had all these businesses? How old were you then?
My mom was, challenged between boyfriends or whatever was going on. So there's a lot of stuff that happened in the household that probably shouldn't have happened. I got really frustrated in where I was. There was no one who actually spoke thoughtful, kind things. And all my friends in the school, the public school system, everybody around me teased me. They, made me feel really bad because I, had all these endeavors. Like, why are you doing it? That's so stupid, It's just...
Yeah.
And at 13, you really, it requires someone, an adult, to come in and really help a child understand that, what people are saying to you doesn't matter, to tell you why it doesn't matter, and to really just help you step outside of your circumstances. So I gave up. I just stopped. I don't even remember when I stopped or why I just stopped. I just know that at one point I just got tired of being teased and being different, so I just gave in and did what the crowd did, and by the time I was 20 years old, I was incarcerated.
And incarcerated for what?
Grand theft larceny.
Oh, that's good. And I know how that happened, so why don't you tell everybody what the circumstances were?
I actually worked at a store, and... it was some fraud involved, but we were stealing stuff from the store we worked at.
Oh,
me and a
okay.
couple of colleagues. We were actually stealing. We're just straight up stealing and using other people's credit cards to do it.
And so once you were caught and sent to jail, where was the moment when you just said, I'm not going to live like this at all anymore? I'm going to change what I'm doing. And how did that happen?
Once I got into jail and started meeting the other prisoners and realized that if I thought I was weird before or out of place before, I was really out of place in jail.
You were out of place because why? You had a different set of values than they did?
A different set of values and vocabulary spoke a lot different than everyone there.
Uh-huh. I could almost hear that now. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It just didn't fit in at all. So that was the first time I really, when I sat and, as I said, created this business, I really realized that that was the first time I experienced the power of a vision. Like, in my mind's eye, all I knew is when I got out of there, I wasn't going back, and I was willing to do whatever it took, no matter what. So that's, to me, when you get into purpose and the vision and the power that will propel you past obstacles, hurdles, setbacks, naysayers, critics, your fears, doubts, is when you get to that no matter what.
And what was the purpose of, well, you've mentioned what you thought your purpose was, but how did you corral that into a business? What was your thought about how you're going to create a business out of that purpose?
When I stepped out of corporate, it was to be my sister's live-in aide and caregiver. I had a six-figure salary as a biotechnology consumables and benchtop instrument rep for a company, a very Fortune 500 company, and I was a travel rep, executive, 80% travel, 10-state territory, doing exceptionally well. But I saw my sister was struggling and living with our parents, and I had her come down to Austin to attend a adult program here, and then I just realized that once she was here, like, what was I going to do, send her back? It just didn't seem right. So I stepped out, and in my search, I understood SMART goals, and so I went and started Googling goals and purpose, and because I heard someone speak at a networking event, and I heard them talk about purpose was the perpetual goal. And that when you chase stuff and status, you want to get a house, you want to get a promotion, you want to get a house. It's all, once you get there, it's like you're almost depressed when you're a high-drive person, that mm-hmm. when you know your purpose, you don't, everything else just is part of that. You'll never have the ups and downs, the emotional tug. You'll just be in constant momentum. And I was like, that's what I want. I want to be in constant momentum because I knew and had experienced momentum, but it was for stuff and status.
Yeah. And then you developed the vision process?
I went and saw a vision board, and I looked at what they said. They basically, everything I pulled down was telling me to put a bunch of stuff on a board, which was more stuff and status.
Yeah.
And so I didn't like that, so I thought about how I had lived my life, which was a life of being a person of value. My mantra is, you will be better off for having met me, period. So I dictate.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You don't, outside circumstances don't get to dictate that. It's an inside job. And so I took the process of who I was and what the question, number one question people asked me, and I added to it. And so the board that people create is simply the visual manifestation of who they're going to become and the things they'll acquire on that journey. It's not about them going and getting a house and a husband. It's about who they're going to become, and understanding that you're not getting a husband, you are creating a marriage. You're not, getting a house. It's a home for you and your family where you will be an incredible wife and mother. So I'm very clear on that in my workshop.
Do people struggle to find what that purpose is?
Oh, dear God, yes.
I thought so.
that's why I've decided that, that's why I asked, as part of my purpose, how can I help more people? How can I get clear on how to create something that would help people get there quicker and or more efficiently and or have a better understanding? And so this is why I'm setting out off the next year on an RV. I purchased an RV. It's outside. It's going to get wrapped, and I'm going around the country because I just really want to speak to more people in person and understand why there's such a struggle for purpose.
If you do that, then what happens with your commitment to your sister?
Oh, my sister, so this is where, yeah, that was, oh my God, please, we could have a Sophie's Choice crying moment on that one. My sister was actually the one who planted the seed. She's the
really?
One who came in the living room and said, because she'd see me be up all night, she'd, go to sleep and I'd be there prepping, and she'd wake up and I'd be in the same. And she knows I love to drive because I've driven her on many trips and taken her places because her sight is dissipating. So I'm trying to help her create as many memories as possible. And So she said, man, you love to drive, you love to travel, you love working with people. Why don't you just go get one of those RV things and travel around the world, country and do that? And then she walked out the room. I mean, said it so matter-of-factly.
She dropped a bomb in your lap.
It was like a mic drop moment. I kid you not, Lynn. And she walked out. And I went in her room, and I was like, oh, my God, that's brilliant. Where did you get it? And she said, well, you gave me one of these little dream big boards, and I look at it every day. And so, you know, she's like, so it's a big dream. I you know, what? I'm doing what you told me to do. I mean, she was just so, like.
That's funny. That's funny. I love it. So is she coming with you?
No, she has disabilities that require that she always be in a close proximity to a major health care center.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, she went with me to pick it up, and, you know, I could see how much. So I'm going to try as much as possible to take her to some places that aren't, you know, too far off the grid, but she can't actually just be with me at all time. Oh, God, I wish.
Well, now, how is that going to work when you drive a bus into Chattanooga, Tennessee, and you park it somewhere? Are people going to know that you're coming? How are you going to get people to come onto the bus, the RV?
Well, it's actually an RV, so it's a conversion van. It's not. I don't have an actual bus yet. That's the goal.
Okay.
The name of it is actually, I bought the URL. I own the hashtag. I've got, you know, Twitter accounts, Instagram, and they're just not up yet. And it's the Dream Big Bus.
Okay.
And so that was not taken. So that's what it's called. It's the Dream Big Bus. And for now, you know, people will be able to take tours, but I'll have it wrapped so you can see the outside. And I'll be able to, you know, if there's conferences, you can drive. Most of those conferences, you can drive things in.
Yeah.
More than anything is the question that I'm putting on the side of the RV is, what would you do if you knew you would not fail? So even
Beautiful.
If you never meet me, you just drive past me, that question is going to be seated in your mind.
Yep. And so let's follow through with that. Say you're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and you're there because there's a convention there, and you are going to go and park the RV there. So what would people do with that? Do they just step onto the RV whenever and talk to you? Will they schedule time, and
how much time will they have? Yeah, so right now I'm working to create like the vision development process so that there's an online tool. So by the time I leave and I set off in April, that is because we're in the final stages. I had someone come in and videotape one of my workshops. So that'll be an offering that they can actually get acquire online. I have a Facebook page that I've set up that's coming through. I have a crowdfunding, so there will be different levels of interfacing with me where you'll be able to be part of like a private monthly call or to be part of certain things if you opt in and support at a certain crowdfunding level. So I'm going to give, you know, people as many opportunities to engage with me and follow me. And then we'll do a contest for the next year for people to post their boards and then post as things come on, you know, from their boards. Like, I want to see who are the big dreamers out there.
Yeah.
Just get people to start posting boards and see so that they can post the board, what's on the board, and then post when they actually have done it.
That's great. That'll be very exciting to see all that.
Yeah.
You'll really know how many lives you've changed when you see something like that.
Exactly. So the goal is for me is that it's not that I didn't hear this. It's just that I didn't hear it in a way that I understood it. And I get that I don't need to, there's 7 billion people on the planet. I don't need to touch 7 billion. I just need to touch the ones that I'm called to touch. You know,
I
don't need to take over the world just to be the voice. I always think of that Marianne Williamson poem, or, you know, when I don't, it's about letting your light shine because someone else needs me to shine so they can shine.
Yep. Yeah. Let me turn this focus around here to something that I'm curious about. I know that when we are growing up, as I mentioned initially, I developed some what I would call truths about money that weren't necessarily true. But I think that for all of us who reach some level of adulthood and some level of success, money is very much a part of all of that, either the lack of it or the abundance of it or the desire for more of it or whatever it is. And when we stop and take a look at where did we create these myths about money, in most cases it happens when we're children or young adults. So let me ask you a couple of questions because I'm curious to know how you created whatever the stories are you have about money. So when you were a child, what was the one thing you learned about money?
All I can remember is being raised in church and hearing the money is the root of all evil.
Oh,
seriously.
Okay.
So that really set me up to have a really bad relationship.
I just undo that
self-limiting belief, right?
Yep, that's a big one. And so then, when did it occur to you that that wasn't necessarily true?
When I found a church that had a better teaching and actually said, you know, they basically said, many of you have probably heard this, but it's not, it's the love of money. So I was like,
well, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, right.
That was what was one of your first experiences with money?
That I was really good at acquiring it because, like, 13, you know, my parents were divorced. My mom at the time was married to, I don't even want to say the man's name. He was such a horrible person. But he was an alcoholic who just ran through her wallet and he just was a horrible person. But I remember her coming to me for money. I'm 13, and I'm giving her money.
Yeah. Were there any defining moments that you can think of that made you say, that's never going to happen to me?
Yes. Just one incident where she was actually begging him not to take the last of her money.
He either did or didn't.
Oh, he did.
All right. So when you were looking at all of this, what would you say when, you know, I had that moment there when I observed something like that going on in my house, not exactly that, but something that made me create these myths about money. So when you saw that happen with your mother and that conversation that she was asking you for money and this guy took the last penny she had, what did you say about yourself and your relationship to money?
Oh, that I'm never going to rely on anyone else to be my provider, that I will always be able to provide my own roof over my own head.
Yeah. And so you've pretty much done that.
Yes, I have.
Are there any women that were in your life that you can recall who provided you with any kind of advice that you think really made a difference?
When it came to money, not that I can think of, no.
Would you say, what would you say would be the most, the best and the worst financial decisions you've ever made?
The best financial decision I ever made was when I bought my first house. That was a great experience and a great, you know, the worst decision I ever made was getting so caught up in what other people were doing and had that instead of buying more houses to rent, I actually renovated my house so it would be pretty.
Oh, that's really great. I like that story. Most people would say you just keep acquiring them, you know, and there's value in that. I don't want to diss that thing because certainly many people buy homes and not homes. They buy commercial properties that they renovate and then they rent them out, and that's a very viable way to create wealth. I mean, there's no question about it. But I want to think farther along the lines here. I wonder if you've ever given any thought to what I termed before retirement.
Before retirement? No.
No, what I've termed before, I use the word retirement. And I don't want to lead you down the path, but what I'm saying is that for the most part, people think of it as a particular time in their life, an age. It's usually related to an age. And there's usually a number attached to that of what they think they need in order to have what they might call a successful retirement. You don't strike me as somebody who is working until a certain age and then you're going to retire. So I'm looking at this and saying, if you, where do you see yourself 10 years from now? Do you see yourself retired? Do you see yourself moving on to something else? Or is this a commitment you have to what you're doing that you'll probably do for as long as you can?
I will do this for as long as I can. This is literally why I was so bent on purpose, because I don't retire from purpose, because purpose is just me. It's who
exactly.
I am.
Yeah. That's the point I wanted to hear you say. When you're actually that into what you're doing, there is no time frame to it. There's no desire to get out of it or move away from it into something else. And
right.
And that, I think, is the key to what you're talking about, that when you really are living your life on purpose, it has no time frame. I think you would agree.
Oh, absolutely. It has no time frame.
What's your next step?
Now, my next step is to build a business that allows me to be mobile, as well as it allows me to, to buy some properties. So now I don't have home ownership, and I would like to own some investment properties, so that, you know, if Austin's my home base, that I have something here where I can have a portion of it for me, but the other portion of it is actually, you know, like a fourplex, and then 3 units pay for the thing itself, and then when I come to Austin, I'll have somewhere, and the other times it can be like an Airbnb, something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Thinking about some key places where I have, you know, where I'd like to be able to be comfortable. You know, Dallas is where my parents are. My sister is actually, she's going back to Dallas, so she decided that she wanted to go back to Dallas, and I was just so grateful that we didn't force her hand. She actually said she wants to go back and be close to our parents, and she's
okay
with that. So
yeah, that's nice. So after you do that, what's next for you with your purpose? How else do you see?
So one of the consistent requests that I've had, because I've been blessed that part of my vision was to be able to use this process as a supporting other entrepreneurs who have conferences. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when they have me come in and do vision development at the beginning of whatever their retreat or conference is, their clients actually walk away and do so much better because they're clear. So,
yeah.
You know, so that process that they've, because if I'm at their retreat or conference, they actually do it themselves. So I've been asked that I license that. So my next thing is to create a licensing process for this, so that it, you know, and then that'll create a stream, you know, stream of income for me, again, to be able to, you know, build something so that I don't have children, so, you know, there's no need to leave something. But there is, you know, I went to Howard University, that, you know, I can create a scholarship, or, you know, there's people who have been incarcerated who want to be entrepreneurs. You can create a scholarship or something like that, so.
That's spectacular. I love it. That's really great stuff. Well, I want to thank you, Michelle Baker, for being a guest on my Power of the Purse podcast today. To all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of money and how it can help you achieve your life goals. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, powerofthepursepodcast.com, select the contact tab, and find a time that works for you. Thanks again, Michelle, for sharing your time and knowledge, and would you share with everyone how they can get a hold of you?
Yes, you can go to my website, Michelle, that's M-E-S-H-E-L-L, Baker, B-A-K-E-R.com. And you can go on to the tab Contact, and you can scroll down and select time to have a conversation, or just email me directly at info@michellebaker.com. And that's my name, info@michellebaker.com.
Fabulous. Thank you for sharing your time and knowledge. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.